Hey there, my friend, it's Trisha Carr. Real quick before we head into this episode, I just want to make sure that you know about Modern Mystic Life, a subscription service for spiritual mentoring and education. The monthly subscription is only $11.11 per month. We have regular support and inspiration delivered with the utmost ease right into your text messenger 2 to 4 times per week. You can use your mobile device or your desktop messenger to access the lessons and meditations, a monthly MP3 download of a produced meditation, at least once per month live meditation led by me. There is no account login, and we have a monthly live class workshop. These are usually $35 for non-subscribers, so it is quite a deal. And the community is amazing. This is a way for you to support the Charmed Life podcast and also a way for us to be able to work more closely together. So do check out how you can subscribe in the show notes. I hope to see you there. Hello and welcome to the Charmed Life podcast. This podcast is all about magic, metaphysics, mysticism, and the unconditional love of the universe. And I am your host. My name is Trisha Carr. We are live on YouTube and some other streaming platforms. And you may be also listening to this in the replay or on the podcast. Welcome. We are going to have a great conversation. And I think it's the perfect time as we are doing this right at the height of season. We are in December of 2023. We're at the hustle and bustle of holidays and figuring out how to somehow hurry up, get to that finish line to be able to rest and connect. And it just seems to be overtaking us. So we are going to be talking today with an expert on mindfulness and on intention. Those are a couple of things we're going to be talking about. And I have to tell you that there are certain practices or certain ways of being that are fundamental to all of us for us to change our life or to have anything that resembles a life that provides us freedom, success, happiness, peace, presence. And to that end, I also want to point your attention to a little program that I have that can help you with mindfulness. It's called Easy Intuition and Meditation. It's actually a 30-day journey. It's very low cost, and there are tons of daily meditations delivered to you, as well as some easy to digest and inspiring lessons. So check that out. It's both in the show notes and I put it there in the comments. So without further delay, I want to have this wonderful conscious conversation with my very special guest. As I said, an expert in intention and mindfulness, and his name is Dr. Greg Hammer. Welcome. Nice to see you.
Great to be with you.
Now, I have to share with you that this is very timely because my husband, about for the last year, has been digging into mindfulness. He actually did therapy for about a year, and he picked a therapist who was a proponent of mindfulness. And he's been on a very serious mindfulness practice. And I got to tell you, we've been together 20 years, and it has changed his life. It's changed our lives. And, you know, I'm a meditation, a hypnotherapist and all that kind of stuff. So I'm just really excited to hear it from your perspective as a scientist. Tell us about the work that you're doing and the journey that you've been on, wherever you want to start.
Sure. Well, I have been a long time, I guess, seeker of the truth, like many of us. Mm-hmm. I've been a lifelong fitness enthusiast, sports. My undergraduate degree is in nutritional science. It's been a big part of my intensive care practice for children, since we tend to starve them when they're critically ill, just when they may need extra calories and nutrition. Yeah. And I've gotten into sleep physiology as well, and longevity and health span science. So I really started increasing my focus in these areas when I joined something called WellMD at Stanford, which is a group that was convened back in 2011 in response to the growing prevalence of burnout in medicine. And what is burnout? Burnout is just the emotional and physical fatigue caused by chronic stress. Yeah. So I think the thread that really sews all of these elements together related to wellness is chronic stress. Yeah. and resilience. What is resilience? Resilience is our ability to tamp down or neutralize acute stress, right? So it's okay to be acutely stressed, but when we are not resilient, when we're fatigued, when our sleep, exercise, and nutrition are off the rails, we then lose our ability to be resilient. And it's resilience that prevents us from developing chronic stress. So it's okay to have acute stress. In many circumstances, it's adaptive. After all, these acute stress responses evolved for a reason over tens or hundreds of thousands of years. And the idea is really to be mindful of those responses and prevent them from enduring to what we would consider as chronic stress, which has a myriad of adverse health, both physical and mental health consequences. So, you know, that's sort of the nuts and bolts of where I'm coming from. I think the physiology of chronic stress, the medicine, if you will, the human biology of chronic stress is fascinating. And it causes changes akin to aging. And so I think this sort of new anti-aging science, if you will, is really related to sleep, exercise, nutrition, and how to be resilient with respect to stress.
Yes, yes. It's recently, I think, I know I talked about it. I don't remember if I was inspired by someone, but essentially, as you said, we actually having a surge of stress, you know, the fight flight, that would be, you know, our bodies evolve very slowly. Our society and the way we're interacting with one another, doing something completely differently. Our bodies, my doctor said to me once, he's like, well, for example, you still have an appendix and we haven't needed that in, I don't know, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of years. You know, we don't really need it. We don't need tonsils. You know, that's why we could whip some of these organs out. They're not fundamental, at least for our survival or critical. But, you know, our stress response or our fight flight, it is healthy for us to, if we did have to run for our life or run to procure our food, we would do that once a day or once every few days. We would have the satisfaction of actually getting it and then eating. So the all of the stress hormones, the cortisol and the adrenaline, would be fully maximized, utilized, and that is healthy for our instrument. But the way we have it now, it's getting even worse because we get a little ping of the Instagram or the email, and that is triggering a moderate fight flight and not fully being satisfied or removed from our organism. That's one perspective that has become so glaringly obvious as I, you know, looked into that. And so how does mindfulness, and what is mindfulness? Because this is something that is bandied about, and I don't know if people really sometimes understand it. How do you explain mindfulness to people if you...
Yeah, I agree with you. It's a term that's probably been overused. Yeah. And I default to the definition by one of my heroes, Dr. Jon Kabat-Zinn, who's really a founder of what we call mindfulness. And I go for simplicity. So his definition is that mindfulness is awareness of the present moment on purpose, non-judgmentally. Yeah. So there are three key elements there, and the on purpose is the intention that you mentioned up front. Mm-hmm. Awareness of the present moment. So why is that important? Well, you know, we talk about the evolution of our brains. Our brains are hardwired through tens of thousands of years of evolution in ways that tend to apparently veil our ability to be happy. Yeah. And I can point to two ways our brains are hardwired that fit that description. And the first one is we have a negativity bias.
Yes, that's what I was saying. I knew you were going there. I was like, we have to be working against our negativity bias all the time, right?
Right. Or, you know, instead of resisting it, at least learning how to be resilient in the face of that negativity bias. So, as you know, we tend to remember or hold on to negative thoughts and forget the positive ones. Yeah. I was actually talking to a PhD psychologist the other day, and he told me that there is scientific evidence that when we're sleeping, of course, sleep is an active process for our brain. It's not that nothing is happening. We're cycling through different levels of or different depths of sleep, different cycles. And when we are processing memories during deep sleep, using a center called the amygdala, we tend to process negative memories first, and then we process positive memories. So again, this is while we're in deep sleep. If we don't get enough deep sleep, we end up truncating the process of establishing positive memories.
We don't quite get to them.
Programmed the negative ones, exactly. Yeah. Uh-huh. And so that's what we're stuck with. But in so many ways, we certainly have a negativity bias. And the other way our brains are wired that appears to interfere with our ability to be happy is that we have a very hard time being present. So I like to talk about physiology and mental processes that are adaptive or maladaptive. It's adaptive to think about the past to the extent that we savor positive memories, that we acknowledge our mistakes so that we don't continue to repeat them. But when we obsess over the past, given our negativity bias, we gravitate toward negative thoughts, which include shame, regret, low self-esteem, the imposter syndrome, which is a fascinating topic, and we generate depression. Yeah. And when we think about the future, it's good to, you know, plan to put food on the table and think about good times to come, you know, maybe the holidays with family members, which may not be all good, but let's call it a positive, adaptive consideration of the future. But when we overthink the future with our negativity bias, we generate a lot of fear and anxiety. We catastrophize. We think of what is the worst thing that might happen. And so this inability to be present, if we close our eyes and we try to just be present, the default mode of our way of thinking is to go to the past or the future and to get stuck there.
Yeah.
And in maladaptive ways. So the first definition of mindfulness, or the first part of the definition, is awareness of the present moment. Because when we are truly aware of the present moment, we're happy.
Right.
Right? Mm-hmm. So we're walking through the forest. We're totally in touch with the footfall on the soft pine needle floor of the forest. We can hear the little sounds our footfall is making against those needles and appreciating the softness and the cushion. And we look up above at the canopy of leaves and tall trees and the sunlight filtering through, and these gigantic trees that have been around for a long time. And we enjoy the kind of sweet oxygen-enriched air that we're breathing. And in those moments, we're happy. We're not thinking about something we're ashamed of that we did or didn't do yesterday, or worried about the list of things we have to do tomorrow. So being fully present, whether it's an intimate moment with a partner, it's an experience in nature, it's listening to just totally resonant music, connecting with a piece of art. When we're present, we're happy. So certainly being aware of the present moment is an important skill. And then Dr. Kabat-Zinn said, on purpose. Why on purpose? It's because our default mode of thinking is this rather negative, distracted, unable to be present way of thinking. And so if we want to change that, we have to have a plan. And the good news is that our brains have this amazing quality called neuroplasticity. We can actually change the way we think, but we have to do it on purpose. We have to have intention. And the third element, beside being aware of the present moment on purpose, is non-judgmentally. Mm-hmm. And again, we are sort of hardwired to judge everything around us as good or bad. And because of our negativity bias, there's more bad than good. And especially when it comes to ourselves, because we are certainly our own most harsh critic. So we can learn to drop the judgments through practice, through intention, through being purposeful. And when we do that, we see things the way they truly are. Because when we judge, we're kind of looking through a veil of our own biases. Mm-hmm. So when we drop the judgment, and particularly the self-judgment, we can see things as they are. Things do not have to be good and bad.
Right.
So my practice that I embrace myself and that I teach is called the GAIN practice, which is the title of my first book, Gain Without Pain. And the GAIN is an acronym for what I think are the four pillars of happiness. Ooh. And they're very interrelated, and they are gratitude, mm-hmm. acceptance, intention, and non-judgment.
Yeah.
And there we are with Dr. Kabat-Zinn's definition of mindfulness, being aware of the present moment on purpose, non-judgmentally.
If a person were to sit down with this GAIN technique, read your book, of course, that would be very helpful. Would that be could that sufficiently start to move them? Because of course, when we're in the state of being, basically the experience feels like I can't stop. I can't, you know what I mean? Like in a lot of people, when they come to me and I'll talk about meditation and they say, oh, I've tried to meditate. I'm not good at it. It doesn't work for me. And I try to explain that it's true for everyone pretty much. I mean, maybe there's every now and again someone who somehow has come out of that without the really feeling like you're a slave to how the negatively biased mind is running you. If they sat down even on their own and took 5 minutes to work through GAIN, could that start to turn the wheel a little bit?
Or exactly. Yeah. Yes, exactly. So the practice ideally is done in the morning. We get up, we open the blinds, we do our morning hygiene, we find a comfortable place to sit, and we close our eyes and we begin to focus on the breath. So like all forms of meditation. And by the way, I like what you said about people saying they can't do it, it's too hard. Many people think, because this is what they're exposed to, that meditation means sitting still without moving for a half an hour.
And you have no thoughts. No thoughts at all.
And banishing all thoughts from your mind.
Yeah, exactly.
And the GAIN practice is potentially 3 minutes, and you're going to actually guide your own thoughts.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So we first...
You're moving them intentionally, and that's great. That's freedom. I think that's freedom that we're all looking for.
Yes. And I think in particular, these four elements are very tightly interwoven, and they pretty much cover the spectrum of how we can rewire our neuroplastic minds to be happier.
Right.
So we're sitting, we focus on the breath. We slow down the inhalation through our nose, maybe to a count of three. We pause to a count of three. And we let the breath go slowly to a count of four. So in through the nose, slowly to a count of three, pausing to a count of four, slowly exhaling through our nose or mouth to the count of four. So in, pause, exhale, breathing into our belly and just appreciating the expansion of our chest and our belly. And then we begin the GAIN contemplation. So we start with that for which we're grateful. And we all have much for which to be grateful. Most of us have a roof over our heads. We are in a safe place, unlike others in the world. We have loved ones and friends and community for which we can be grateful. Our relative health, be it not perfect, it's a miracle that we're here breathing and able to sit for 3 minutes. And we may be grateful for our children, our pet, our environment. And so we sort of sit with these thoughts for 30 or 45 seconds as we link this to the breath. And then we transition to acceptance, because life is not all a bowl of cherries. It doesn't necessarily comport to our apparent wants and needs. So we've all lost somebody that we love. I lost my son 6 years ago at the age of 29.
So sorry.
We all have pain. So we typically resist it, but the more we resist it, the more we suffer. There's a formula in the book, suffering equals pain times resistance. So the pain is sort of there.
It's like isometrics, which you're a fitness person. So it's basically strengthening it by pressing against the specific thing. Yeah.
Right. So we actually bring this uncomfortable thought or experience closer and closer as we again focus on our breath, and we imagine opening our chest, opening our heart, and bringing this pain into our heart and actually sitting with it, nurturing it with our heart, enveloping it with our heart, until we can ask ourselves the question, can I live with this pain forever? And the answer is yes. Mm-hmm. And we just relax with that feeling into our slow, intentional breath. Then we move to the GAIN, which is intention. And our intention is to be more present. So we may focus actually just on our immediate bodily experience, the pressure of the chair against our body, the fullness of our breath, expanding our chest and abdomen, maybe something we hear in the distance, a car passing or an airplane going by. And we just focus on our current experience. And we recognize that our intention is also to be more positive, kind, caring, generous. And we sit with this, again, linking it to the breath. And then we move finally to the end and gain, which is non-judgment. And here, one suggestion I have is picture an image of the Earth apparently suspended in space, one of these beautiful NASA images. And the Earth is neither good nor bad. It's just the planet that it is. It's neither good nor bad. And so it's only logical for us to think that we too are neither good nor bad. Right. I am neither good nor bad. I am just the human being that I am. I am neither good nor bad. I simply am. And again, we link this to the breath. And then just focus again on the breath. And then slowly open our eyes. And we're ready to go out in the world.
That can change your life. You know, it's interesting because to promote this podcast, I went on Instagram and I said there are some fundamental practices or ways of being that are really, you might interpret them one way or another, but they're the same for all of us. And mm-hmm. you're talking about the physiology of sleep and obviously our intake and output, which is the what we eat and how we move our bodies, and then just how we are in the moments. And these are the things that can make us, you could start with just healthy. And then from there, we have, expansions on that, which might be happy, but healthy is really, I think that's the most satisfying. That's the most important. That's the most fundamental.
Well, we do have to take care of our physical bodies with a focus on sleep, exercise, nutrition. Mm-hmm. We do have to have intention or a plan to do those things. And if we do that, then we can sink into our spiritual well-being without mm-hmm. distraction from the body. And yes, we're all wired the same way. Mm-hmm. This negativity bias we have is not our dirty little secret. We all share this. Mm-hmm. We all have this sort of imposter syndrome. We feel as though if others knew what our thoughts were like much of the time, they wouldn't have respect for us. They wouldn't want to be our friend, what have you.
Right.
No, that's not true. Yeah. We don't have any dirty little secrets. We're all the same. And these elements of wellness are very interwoven and we share them in common. And the good news is, despite the way our brains are wired that presents challenges to us, we can change the way we think. And with this gain practice, for one, which is really a mindfulness practice, it's learning how to be more aware of the present moment on purpose, non-judgmentally. What happens is that when we are not being grateful, when we're being ungrateful or resisting something uncomfortable or not being intentional and just lapsing into our old habits and being judgmental, the more we do this daily gain practice, the more a light bulb will illuminate somewhere in our thoughts. And remind us that we're being ungrateful. And we had just sort of inhaled and exhaled the importance of being grateful. And we can have a little laugh to ourselves, get a little dopamine hit because we were temporarily being ungrateful. And we can redirect our thoughts to gratitude. Mm-hmm. And so the more we do a practice like this, the more we have these light bulb moments when we're lapsing into our old ways of thinking. And so gradually we're really shifting the way we think and experience to this new paradigm. And it's very liberating, as you said earlier.
I have a friend who told me, I did it for 2 weeks, but I had to stop because as I meditated, I realized how angry I was or, you know, got to the negative feelings that are running. And so he and I was like, no, but do you see? Those are running anyway. Those aren't happening because you're meditating. You're actually off-gassing them. You're, as you said, nurturing it with your heart in those moments. But the tendency is to run. We think we have to run away from it. It happened to me last night. I was like feeling some unease within me. And I was like, what is that? I let it bubble up and I felt some you know, if I traced it back to some childhood fear and pain and trauma and everything. And even though I know this, my energy, my consciousness wanted to go, oh, go away from it, put it away. And I was like, no, it's the opposite of what needs to happen. It's still, there's a knee-jerk reaction to not be with it. But it is, again, it's already there. It's already in the soil. It's not that you're becoming injured. The injury is there at the time. And it, with the light of your awareness or the presence, actually makes it, melts it. How would you expand on that or discuss that piece?
I think you nailed it. I think what happens is when we kind of sink into our hearts, and sink into our breath, our gratitude, acceptance, intention, non-judgment, things bubble up.
Yeah.
You know, we're sort of unmasking things, and that's perfect because those are the things we need to sit with, decide or discern whether it's something we can change or something we cannot change. If it's something bubbling up from our childhood that's uncomfortable, and we all have that, nothing we can do about it other than embrace it, accept it. So this bubbling up of these uncomfortable experiences is facilitating acceptance of them.
Yes.
And so, as you said, yes, our tendency is to resist rather than accept. Mm-hmm. But resistance just amplifies our suffering. So pushing those things that are bubbling up back down is actually a form of resistance, of course, and suffering equals pain times resistance. It's amplifying our suffering. So yes, exactly. When I go to spiritual retreat, you know, sitting and meditating with a teacher and 100 of my best friends in the room, and then in the afternoon, after a long morning meditation, we have questions and answers, and many people bring up the pain that they're experiencing. And so this phenomenon is very common because we've resisted some discomfort. We've pushed it down. We've turned away from it. It's still there, as you said. And when we sink into our hearts, when we sink into our breath, when we relax into our hearts, these things come up. And that's the perfect opportunity to sit with them and purposefully decide that it's something we can't change and we need to accept and even embrace it. And it's uncomfortable at first, but gradually as we are steering ourselves in the opposite direction of this negativity and inability to be present, we're more and more able to abide with these feelings and experiences.
And it's really teaching yourself, it's reparenting. It's teaching yourself that I am complete, and I can, whether it is accept, but the pain can not have the resistance, so therefore there isn't the suffering. And I'm not a parent of humans, of animals, but I can imagine and I can relate to the fact that the moments where you're parenting your young child and it's scary or daunting, or your child is unhappy or suffering in some way, it's that there's a moment of resistance, but you have to do it. And so in a moment where we're nurturing ourselves in maybe an acceptance process, we're realizing, oh, it's actually just me. I can, my awareness, my presence can actually parent myself, make that suffering mellow, if nothing more. And we just spend the rest of, after age eight, we just spend the rest of our lives parenting ourselves, I think.
Well, you know, many times that parenting, that self-parenting is reinforcing negativity.
Can be, yes, because you think you're being the disciplinarian and, you know, the coach or whatever it is, but right. But the nurture.
Well, we all have this negativity, so our self-esteem tends to be in question.
Yes.
And so unless we have a practice to the contrary, we tend to reinforce those negative feelings, sensations, thoughts, experiences. So the good news is the solutions are simple in principle. So, you know, when I read other spiritual teachers, you know, I may love what they have to say. It's often a little bit complicated for me. I like to break things down into KISS principle, small bites. Mm-hmm. So our physical well-being, it's all about sleep, exercise, nutrition. And then you can kind of further define what good sleep hygiene is. What forms of exercise do we need to do given the time available? How should we eat in an intentional way? And then with regard to our spiritual well-being, what are the key principles? And I think that if we can remember those four GAIN principles and have a practice where we sit with them, what happens is we associate the breath after days, weeks, months of this practice with those elements. So if I'm walking down the hall about to meet with my boss, and I'm starting to get that acute stress response, I can feel I'm getting, my heart rate's going up, my blood pressure's probably going up, I'm getting a little sweaty, jittery, anxious, I can just go to my breath as I walk down the hall, slowly inhaling to a count of three through my nose, pausing to a count of three or four, exhaling slowly to a count of four into my belly. And I will be flooded with these feelings of gratitude, acceptance, intention, and non-judgment, because I've associated those essential elements with my breath, with the intentional, slow, deep breath that, by the way, actually activates the parasympathetic nervous system, right, which is that side of our autonomic nervous system that puts in check the sympathetic nervous system, which is the fight or flight side of our autonomic nervous system. So the deep breathing both activates the vagus nerve and our parasympathetic nervous system. And it also brings these essential elements of happiness and presence, of gratitude, acceptance, intention, non-judgment. So the practice itself is very simple, but we have to decide that we're worth it,
yes,
that our happiness and ability to be present is worth it. And thereby we can apply our intention to it.
You mentioned neuroplasticity and also the vagus, polyvagus nerve, and, you know, like the neuroplasticity basically will, of our brains, if the pathways are set in a certain way, then there's a default, and speaking of the negativity bias, so that's how our thoughts seem to be escaping us, running away from us. But if we intend and we do the GAIN process, then we'll at least start to shift that a little bit. Likewise, with the vagus nerve, it can be damaged, but the breathing, you know, is actually a soothing balm that is gradually, little by little, sustainably healing it, so that, you know, when you're walking down the hallway and there's your boss, it's easier or more sublimated for that process to begin on its own.
Right? Yeah, I think just simply the deep, slow, intentional breathing activates the vagus nerve and the parasympathetic nervous system. It's always accessible. It's always there.
The parasympathetic and the sympathetic cannot be activated at the same time. It's a toggle, correct?
Well, you know, they're both activated to some degree. The important thing is that there's a balance. Just with all other mechanisms of our physiology that are involved in homeostasis, mm-hmm, or a balance. Mm-hmm. So our blood sugar is a result of the balance of insulin, which tends to lower our blood sugar, and another hormone called glucagon, which tends to elevate our blood sugar. And there are other hormones, adrenaline, cortisol, that come into play, but our fasting or baseline blood sugar is a result of this balance, largely between insulin and glucagon. Mm-hmm. Our resting heart rate is a balance of our sympathetic tone and our parasympathetic tone. So both sides are sort of active and working. The important point is to have them in balance and have that homeostatic place be a healthy one.
Right.
So that's to what have we're doing. Generally a low resting heart rate.
Right.
So not to have too much sympathetic influence compared to the parasympathetic, but have them balance in such a way that maybe our resting heart rate is 60 rather than 80.
And homeostasis is a very powerful, almost like a drive that it in some ways, if you think about, like, you know, they've said that when you do a survey, some people have more of a fear of public speaking than death, which obviously doesn't make any logical sense. That's kind of that homeostasis that is keep things as they are, because the ego mind, whatever you want to say, believes that whatever we've survived is how we continue to survive. And so working this gain process will help us to begin to change the homeostasis so that we're not always like being, again, driven by it. It's fascinating. The tools are all here with us though, aren't they?
Yes, they are. And they are accessible. Mm-hmm. We just have to do a little bit of homework, decide what's best for us, and then put our minds to it. And that's what we call intention. We have to live intentionally.
And we have 3 minutes. We do have 3 minutes.
Yes, we can set our alarms 3 minutes earlier, go to bed 3 minutes earlier the night before. I mean, who doesn't have 3 minutes?
Right.
You know, the question we have to ask ourselves is, am I worth it?
Yeah.
And the answer is yes, you are.
And those who receive you, those who are in your life are also worth it, but you're worth it first.
Well, you have to put on your own oxygen mask first,
right?
Don't you? Yeah.
I'm speaking to the codependents like me out there. Like, and if you're worried, if you're not worth it, think about you have to also put on your oxygen
mask. Well, we all, I think, tend to think that we're not worth it.
Yeah.
Some of the time, all of the time. And, you know, we have to have an intentional practice, which will lead us to the conclusion that we are worth it. Of course we're worth it.
Of course. Right. Just to live and be here and present. Of course. That's what we are. That's why we're doing the thing. Yeah. Well, I would love for you have your book, The Gain. And when was this published? Is that the...
It's actually published in 2020.
Oh, wonderful.
Well, so that's sort of coincided with the pandemic, May of 2020. And, you know, that's why I'm doing a lot of connecting with wonderful people like you still about what was really the center of the book.
Mm-hmm. And how else, in addition to the book, what are some other ways that people can receive your teaching, your guidance, your work? How are you working with people?
I thank you for putting on the screen my website, greghammermd.com. And I'm pretty sure there's a link there to my publicist if anybody wants me to connect with them that way, to come and give a talk or a workshop or just to connect and reach out. So always welcoming that.
Wonderful. That's good to know. So you're doing public speaking great. Good.
Yes. Yes.
You're on Instagram, we have your website there, greghammermd.com. And thank you so much for this work that you're doing on our beautiful world. It is powerful and simple. And that's one of the hardest things for us to do as humans is to let things be simple.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much. It's been wonderful being with you. And I look forward to our next get together.
Oh, I agree. Thank you so much. I'd love for you to come on again some other time if you do have the time.
Sure. We'd love it.
Have a great day.
Okay, likewise.
Well, everyone, that is Dr. Greg Hammer. And I'm so excited to get that book. And I know it's one that my husband will love as well. And so I just want to encourage you to echo Dr. Hammer's words that you are worth it. You have 3 minutes a day. And, you know, we all have these, you aren't unique. You aren't, well, you are, but also you're not. We have the same struggles and we also have the same tools that are available to us. I'm so grateful to have had this conversation today, and I'm grateful to connect with you. Thank you all for being here. Be sure to check the show notes. Thanks for tuning in. I love you, whoever you are.